morning and welcome. I'm Kirsty McGregor, accountant in residence at Capitalise and founder of the Corporate Finance Network. And this week, Alex is away again, I hear you cry. I know. And so I've had to rope in a new co-host for this week. I wanted to give you a different name, different voice, someone that you might not actually know. But within Capitalise, we know him very well. He's a key member of the Capitalise team, and he's also a regular listener. And he tells me that he listens on a Friday morning when he's walking the dog. So I'm not sure if he'll listen on this week's Friday morning walk. So I would like to introduce James Ryle, our head of operations. James, hello. Thank you for agreeing to do this. Arm up your back.
Thank you very much, Kirsty. What a lovely intro. I suspect tomorrow's dog walk will not involve this podcast.
Oh, what a shame. I hope you're going to get all your family listening, like Olivia did. But listen, we know who you are internally. You're very rarely front and centre, customer facing. So people might not know who you are. What is your role? What do you do?
So I'm the head of operations here at Capitalise. Been with the business just over a year now. Our product team have created this massive and wonderful product for accountants and SMEs. My job really is helping ensuring that it's delivered to all of our clients and customers as smoothly and as effectively as possible. So I cover everything from legal compliance to phone systems and back-end IT.
Brilliant. And you've recently been doing some mentoring as well.
I have. At the back end of last year, I joined Enterprise Nation as part of the government's Help to Grow scheme as a management mentor.
Ah, oh, fantastic. Well done. Well, look, if I drop into calling you JR as we do in the office, I'm sure people won't mind.
But, Not a problem.
Thank you for agreeing to do this. And I'm going to keep the first story well within your comfort zone because we're going to talk systems, although these systems are a little bit larger and more complicated, I imagine, than we get involved
just
in.
Just a little.
In Capitalise. These are the story from City AM about the banking systems, which is something that's rumbling on post-Brexit, specifically the clearing of the euro-denominated bonds across the whole of the EU. And did you know, I didn't know this, to be honest, they are still being done in London for pretty much the whole of the EU, or a very large percentage of them. They think about 94% are still cleared at the London Clearinghouse. So clearly the EU don't want this to carry on, given that we have now left the bloc and they are wanting to take it back onto the continent. And there has been a lot of backwards and forwards negotiation going on. It was originally supposed to end in June 22. They pushed that back now to June 25. Really now there's a discussion around how are we going to avoid a cliff edge at June 25? How are they going to bring in an alternative clearing solution for all these bonds? The implications are massive here. It's a huge part of the London's financial services sector. So if we don't have this, we're going to incur, we're going to lose income and profits from this trade, but also reputationally across the world. I'm wondering, is this going to affect London as a, centre for financial services? Quite obvious that EU want their own facility. And I suppose part of me is thinking morally, can we really try and keep hold of this in London? What do you think? It's real big banking systems, this, Joe.
It is. I think the moral question is a really interesting one. For me, London is all about financial services. We are one of the world's leading providers. And for us to provide this for other nations, it definitely has to be in the roadmap for our systems. I think, however, that cliff edge option, that's for me is the concern. Mm-hmm. If we end up in that cliff edge situation, those systems won't have time to be to be processed and developed mm-hmm. effectively. And then the other piece is the people. Mm-hmm. London involves so many people in this process. Moving those people to the right areas, the right locations, at short notice is going to be a problem. And again, you talked about the reputational risk. Actually, the loss to London and the UK from taxes and revenue from just having those systems and those people and businesses is going to be massive. Mm. I guess then the question comes, if not London, where? You can look at Amsterdam, Paris, Frankfurt. All of these would love to see their profile raised by this.
Mm. Yeah. And I think, you were saying maybe the workers could stay on and work remotely. In fact, they're probably not all British citizens anyway, working in that sector, are they, at the moment? So it'll be interesting to see where that goes. Now, I'm going to jump to a different story now, which is a little bit of a sad one for me. You'll remember that it was in January, actually. It doesn't feel that long ago, but it was in January that we covered the launch of Cosmic Girl, the first ever satellite mission in the UK, which was launched from this spaceport in Cornwall, this brand new spaceport. And unfortunately, it didn't achieve its full objectives of reaching orbit, or the target orbit it intended to reach. Because would you believe, I found out more recently, that a small component became dislodged, a small fuel filter, and that affected their ability to continue. So it did take off and it did reach space, but it didn't quite get where it needed to go. And prior to that launch, which was, you know, going to be so exciting for Cornwall, it had already had cash flow problems trying to get to that point. And this has just affected their reputation even further. So the story from the BBC is that Virgin Orbit has now ceased operations. So Virgin Orbit was founded in 2017, and it was a spin-off from Virgin Galactic. So Virgin Galactic is the bigger company, the space tourism company you will hear about, that's offering space flights for paying customers. And that is still trading, or wants to offer space flights for paying customers. They haven't got there yet, obviously. And that is still trading successfully, albeit, I'm sure, still with cash flow problems, as every innovative business in this sector will have. So what's going to be the impact now? They've sold off part of Virgin Orbit to other businesses at a huge loss. The impact for Spaceport Cornwall is hopefully not too disastrous, because, you know, the local economy and the local community had really embraced this new initiative, and schools were involved and so on. And I believe that they are now working with other companies, and BBC covers this, that Sierra Space is one company that they are starting to talk to hopefully use the facilities. So I do hope they can rescue it. It was going to be such a romantic type of story that we got, you know, the UK based space sector launched. And what a shame that we've lost it.
Yeah, it is a real shame. It was this podcast that actually introduced me to the concept of the space flight from Cornwall. So yeah, it's a shame, but look, I think for me, I didn't even realize the space sector in the UK was as large as it was. I was looking up some numbers trying to prepare for this today. 49,000 people in the UK are apparently involved, according to the UK space sector. But you know, if they're putting in other sites up in Scotland and up in Shetland, and I think I saw something in the Highlands as well. Perhaps there are other opportunities there. Hopefully for Cornwall, as you said, the infrastructure investments will benefit the local economy, the local SMEs that have had that, you know, 5 years worth of growth of development for the SMEs down there. Hopefully that becomes an innovation hub for them. I know Cornwall do have a push on innovation at the moment. So if they can, repurpose part of this and continue to grow that sector, it'd be fantastic. It does just, however, show some of the risks that we have to bear if we are going to be leading in innovation. I think, you know, we saw earlier this year how British Vault failed to break ground in the Northeast. Some of these big businesses and big infrastructure plays aren't going to work. We've just got to, as the podcast is, stay future positive and try and pull off some of these infrastructure plays.
Yeah. And I think the fact that we are doing all this innovation, we are attempting to bring these new businesses and new sectors into play in the UK is fantastic. And every VC, investor, business angel, even startup grant funds in startup loan funds in the UK, all of them expect to have a certain amount of failure. And in fact, if they don't get that amount of failure, then they question their own investment strategies or their grant making strategies, because they have to be investing in the riskiest things to make sure that we do get some real success stories, and not all of them are going to work. So, you know, if we're in the States, we'd be celebrating this. I should imagine that, someone's failed and it moves on to something else. And, you know, I think we definitely need to come to terms with that. And here is another sector now. And again, it is in the Northeast. You just mentioned British Vault up in the Northeast there. I didn't know this. The northeast off the Tyne coast up in Newcastle is to become the world's largest offshore wind hub after the LEP in the local area up there, the northeast LEP, has invested into the Port of Tyne's Tyne Dock Enterprise Park. They put £4 million in. Port of Tyne, the company themselves, have also invested £2 million. And what they're trying to do is really develop that area. Now, the news story has come from the LEP Network. And the LEP Network is the collaboration of all the LEPs across England and England and Wales. And the, no, not Wales, I say that's wrong. It's just England. And Scotland have got their own. Northern Ireland have got their own. And Wales have got their own. But unfortunately, the LEPs are probably being wound down by the government. So I'm really pleased that the LEP Network's managing to get this positive story out. They're certainly going down with a bit of a fight if they are going down. And the this particular investment has come from the Getting Building Fund, which was one of the government funds that, if you remember, way back at the beginning of the pandemic, kind of April 2020 time, this fund was launched along with some others for other specific sectors. It was a way to really kickstart new opportunities from when we came out of the pandemic. I think at the time, the Chancellor then, Rishi Sunak, was kind of hoping that was going to be about June 2020. And obviously we had a bit of a shock there. But eventually this fund is starting to get some investments made. And this Getting Building Fund has certainly been put to good use for this one, as the money is going to be used to strengthen the quayside so that wind vessels can berth alongside it. And they've also... they're going to be building a better access road and modern services infrastructure and so on that is going to be necessary so that this location can become the hub for operations for Dogger Bank, which is the world's largest offshore wind farm. So the UK are really trying to be the leading player in the offshore energy sector here, and hundreds of new jobs are going to be created, and it's also going to support obviously more jobs in the wider supply chain and SMEs and different communities up there. So that's amazing. And it's in one of the enterprise zones. There are 21 enterprise zones just in York and Humber alone, Yorkshire and Humber alone, which are, give special incentives for businesses based there. So it's good to see that these are finally working. And yeah, who knew, the world's largest offshore wind hub. I suppose they can definitely manage it up there if you've ever been up on that northeast coast.
Yeah, this is just a story that always brings sort of a smile to my face, to see more energy and renewable energy going into the system. I know in sort of North Devon they've had some wonderful projects there about bringing offshore wind in. You know, these things take time, they're long system projects. Yeah. I think I was trying to look at the numbers, we're sort of 29% wind production for our energy system over the last year. Yeah. And if we can move that up and reduce the coal, perfect. And it's all homegrown, local sourced, going to support the local economy, as you say, and bring lots of new jobs to the area. So definitely something we should be supporting in whatever way we can.
Yeah, it's great. Right, JR, over to you to do the outro.
Thank you very much. So I will try and channel my inner Alex to do this. But for those of you that are new to Capitalize, our vision is to give small businesses and their advisors transparency and control over business finance. We want every small business to be able to identify the risks they might face, explore how they stand from a credit perspective, and choose the right funding that fits their business. Don't forget to rate and review the podcast, and of course, subscribe to make sure you get all the future episodes as they arrive hot off the press. Next Friday, we'll be releasing our latest interview podcast. So tune in next week to that new interview, but also take a moment to explore some of the back catalogue. I think we've back referenced a couple of them today, but also over 50 guests giving advice and lessons and tips to all of the accountants we've had that we've had on over the last few years. For more about the Future Positive podcast and Capitalize, please check out capitalize.com. And thanks for listening. Next week, Alex will be firmly back in the hot seat with Kirsty. For 2 weeks until their next business stories.
JR, thank you very much. We would never know the difference.
Thank you very much. That's very kind of you. Take care.